This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott.
You have your own sense of style. The way you dress, the music you listen to, the way you think are all distinctly you. Why wouldn't the way you move be the same?
That's an ad for a new mobility device called the Wheel Model M, a compact-powered wheelchair. Its manufacturers boast that the Model M's tight turning radius and ability to handle any terrain allows the freedom to go anywhere you want. Mobility devices are undergoing a surge of innovation, allowing unprecedented levels of accessibility, if you can afford them. David Perry is a disability rights journalist and a history professor at Dominican University. He attended an Abilities Expo in Chicago, where top-of-the-line mobility devices and assistive technology were on display. He wrote about the widening gap between innovation and affordability for Pacific Standard Magazine. And David Perry, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you saw a variety of these devices, like the wheelchair we just heard about. How much does that one cost?
That one costs about $14,000, and it is not covered by any insurance plan. You know, they talk about themselves as like the Tesla. They want to be disrupting the personal mobility device market. I don't know about you, but I also can't afford a Tesla. So that's, you know, their model is not about affordability, but about innovation and disruption.
Well, I learned from your reporting that devices are coded by the FDA, and that steers whether or not insurance companies will cover them. So what does that mean? How do they distinguish these project codes in their database?
So there's a large process when you create something that is intended to serve a medical purpose in terms of getting it approved by the FDA for that medical purpose and then getting it into their system to be covered by insurance. And then there's still, even if things are coded, lots of bureaucratic hoops to maybe go through in order for any individual to acquire that device. So you have to meet various kinds of standards, and this is, on some level, certainly very good. We wouldn't want people selling a product as life-sustaining or independence-granting technology that wasn't held to very high standards. But it also means that you have to conform to certain kinds of guidelines. It does, I think, limit innovation. And then also it creates a situation where the product is not about consumer pricing and affordability, but about making it work within a system in which the end user often doesn't see the price, has no real relationship to the price. If they did, they couldn't afford it, just like most of us just can't go out and buy an MRI. There's a number associated, a dollar number associated with all kinds of medical procedures and pharmaceuticals and wheelchairs and so on and so forth, but our whole system is geared to sort of hide that from the consumer, hide that from the individual, unless, of course, you don't have health insurance, or your health insurance chooses not to cover something that's very important to you, and then there's no real redress.
Well, how about something like this Tesla-esque model of the Wheel M? How advanced are these new devices, and does it offer users things they are not getting from the traditional, let's say, the Honda Civic version? You know, are they really offering more access, or is it just about luxury?
Well, I think to some extent you'd have to talk to a lot of different wheelchair users. And I want to make clear that I'm not a wheelchair user. I'm the father of a boy with Down syndrome. I write about disability issues of all sorts for many different publications. They certainly look nice. I do think their ability to turn tightly and to go over some obstacles is superior to other kinds of powered wheelchairs. They don't have the big supports that other kinds of powered wheelchairs have, so it really depends on what your needs are. I'm sure there is an individual out there who would find the turning radius and the speed and sort of the smoothness of the control, the ability to drive one on Bluetooth on your cell phone, to have some real accessibility gains. I also don't think that style and luxury is inconsequential in a world in which we often really stigmatize people with disabilities, especially people with visible disabilities who get looked at and stared at and feel cut off from society. And having something sleek and stylish is not an inconsequential advance.
Man, you talk to a number of people who have different perceptions about these devices. How do users describe these kind of tools that they depend on?
So one of the interesting things about wheelchairs and other personal mobility devices, I should say that manufacturers of these devices are very careful as what's a wheelchair, because that's approved by the FDA, and what's a mobility device, that's not a medical device. But for our purposes, we can just say wheelchairs. I think generally in society, wheelchairs get a pretty bad rap. Journalists still use the phrase wheelchair-bound or confined to wheelchairs. Wheelchairs are seen by people who don't use one every day as something you are stuck in when you get sick or when you get hurt or when you're in the hospital. People who use wheelchairs for their everyday mobility have entirely different perspective. I've spoken to dozens of wheelchair users, and the number one word is freedom, and the second word is independence. That's what a functioning wheelchair means to someone who needs one, freedom and independence. Well, that makes the stakes pretty high, because if their wheelchair isn't functioning, or if they can't afford it, or if they can't get one that properly meets their needs, they're not free, they're not independent.
We're speaking with David Perry, a disability rights journalist who wrote about the high cost of some high-tech mobility devices for Pacific Standard. So how are patients who do want one of these models or any device that isn't covered by insurance, how are they paying for them?
Well, unfortunately, I have to say I see a lot of people crowdfunding their medical needs. And this is not just for mobility devices, but all kinds of medical needs. And the disability community is a relatively poor one, but is also a relatively generous one, and we do try to come together and support each other, and we celebrate when someone successfully meets their needs. I talk in my article about a filmmaker named Dominic Evans, a wonderful person, very well known in our community, whose lift broke, and to get a lift to physically get him out of bed, it broke and wasn't getting replaced. And then when he did crowdfund the lift, his wheelchair wasn't working because he hadn't sat in it for a long time because he had been confined to bed. And he's trying to crowdfund his way to these better devices. And I have contributed. I'm all for it. But I also see crowdfunding as fundamentally an indictment of our failure to support people and to meet their needs. That anyone who's trying to crowdfund an essential medical expense has been betrayed by our system.
And he's got a profile. You know, a lot of people know
That's
about
right.
him. I'm not sure if everybody could get their friends all to fund a medical device or even a medical procedure.
That's right. I mean, we see people trying to crowdfund cancer treatments and crowdfund care for their children. I mean, I'm all for crowdfunding when it comes to indie rock bands. I have one. I'm very happy to have crowdfunded an album. I think that's great. When it comes to fundamental rights, I think it's a problem.
Well, wheelchairs are not the only devices subject to bureaucracy, high cost. You mentioned that you have a son with Down syndrome, and your family had an experience with the device that your son needed. What was it, and how much did that cost?
Yeah, it was sort of incredible. So when you're under three, your child can enter early intervention, and a lot of medical costs are really very well covered. It's a wonderful program, and one that ultimately saves a lot of money, because if you meet needs early, often later on in life, the needs are lessened, and so the state needs to support less. It became very clear, though, that he was not developing understandable verbal speech at a rapid rate, and that one of the solutions was to get a device that would have icons and words that you can press, and it says the word out loud so that anyone can understand it. And this is something that can grow with him over time, and there's a lot of technology around this. It's wonderful technology. Well, the insurance programs would pay for a formally approved, durable medical device that only did talking, only did this kind of talking, involved a lot of craft work, a lot of cutting and pasting, literally cutting and pasting and laminating and recording everything. It was not very flexible, and it cost about $3,000. The better technology was a $600 iPad and a $200 app, and eventually that's what we went with the help of a donor. But again, that's not a system. So we have this iPad. He still uses it. We have the app. It's called Proloquo to Go. It's one of a number of high-end speech apps out there. They grow over time. The vocabulary expands. They're very flexible. And the really important thing to me is that when my son is 16 or 17, I fully expect him to have an app like that on his phone, which he'll carry everywhere, and to be able to use it to speak really easily and just pull out a phone. So we have a less effective tool that costs thousands of dollars more but is covered by insurance versus a more effective tool that is cheaper and will grow over time, but is totally not covered.
I guess, David, the challenge here is figuring out what's absolutely necessary to function and to have access. If you do have this sort of beautiful, high-tech, highly designed wheelchair and other models in the tens of thousands of dollars, will insurance companies be facing the question of, you have to pay for this for me, this is just meeting my basic needs? I mean, where's the line there?
I would like people to think about the basic things they take for granted in terms of being able to access public space, move through their private space, communicate with people either face-to-face or through virtual means, by which I mean the internet, but also things like phone calls or watching television and understanding what's going on, being able to work to the extent of one's abilities and skills. These kinds of things many people can just take for granted, but there are so many people with disabilities who, in fact, could move freely in public space and could work and could watch television and could communicate if only we invested and supported basic pieces of assistive technology. And it's important to realize that although the wheelchair costs $14,000, which sounds like a lot, many devices that are covered right now cost much more, including heavily built up and tilting and moving powered wheelchairs. I saw an exoskeleton that helps people walk called ReWalk that costs $77,000, but it's covered by insurance. So right now there are millions and millions, maybe billions of dollars being spent on these products. And the question is, are we spending them in ways that accentuate possibility, that free people to be as independent as possible? Or are we spending that money in ways that the system's moving, but that doesn't really change the lived realities for people with disabilities?
So where, David, do we go from here?
Well, I think we keep pushing on insurance companies and on the FDA, but also on companies to try to build more flexibility into the system and to build more accountability. And it really depends on where you're looking, that there's the big Medicare and Medicaid systems that still have enormous, complex bureaucratic hoops that are very frustrating for people, often people who may have communication or mobility needs. So if you add a whole lot of forms and phone calls and waiting on hold, that may add another level of difficulty. We need to streamline, but really for me it's about individualizing and about thinking hard when we invest heavily in technology. Who's going to be able to access this technology? And if your answer is, well, only the super rich, I'm not sure that's so worth your time.
Well, David Perry, thank you for speaking with us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
David Perry, he's a disability rights journalist and history professor at Dominican University, and wrote about that tension between innovative technology and cost for Pacific Standard. The article, You Shouldn't Have to Crowdfund Your Wheelchair, can be found at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.